There was a bumper sticker I saw yesterday as I was riding my bike past Stanford, and it said simply, "Legalize physics." And I immediately thought of some poor postdoc emerging from the bowels of one of those stone edifices on the campus, having gotten high on the theory of relativity for the last 12 hours, you know, working out the subatomic realities of the interchangeability of mass and energy, and coming out into the glaring sunlight and traffic and Starbucks, and kind of life wasn't where they put it when they went in. But it's funny because I was laughing to myself because this last stanza of the Gita of seeing inaction in action and action in inaction reminds me of getting down to just the very minute and finite level of our material existence. That we, you know, many of us know about atoms, and if you took an atom and made it the size of a football field, the nucleus, the only part of the atom that can be considered to be having mass, would be the size of a grain of sand. And inside that nucleus, with proper pressure applied, the protons and neutrons and electrons can move at speeds of 600 to 40,000 miles per second. And you start to think in terms of particle seconds, so you don't have to waste time with all those zeros. And it's just fascinating because there's this dynamic web of inseparable energy patterns that we see. When we study these particles, we see that there is this constant movement of creation and dissolving, and just this constant state of movement and life and birth, just really, you know, the particles smash into one another, you know, in these facilities that we have nearby, and new particles are created, and completely different things happen. But nothing ever, you can never get your hands on, say, a building block of this. You can only just witness energy patterns. And it's interesting because there's also this beautiful line from the Tao, which says that the stillness in stillness is not real stillness. Only the stillness that can be perceived in movement, then you begin to see the divine rhythm that pervades heaven and earth. And so this dynamic play of interchange of energy from the finite level out to the farthest orbs in space, we see this movement, this constant movement. And also we have in the Hindu tradition the Nataraj, the dance of life and destruction, that planets and galaxies are born and die, that great chapters of history come and go, that episodes of our own life are born, we transform, we change, we enter into new phases, and even our lives begin and end, because the other part of this law of karma is reincarnation, that we do this for eons until we begin to learn. So we have this background of this great force of energy and interchange of activity going on. And we enter into the scene with our thwarting cross currents of desire that manifest in these two qualities of attachment and repulsion. And that we enter in and we try to make ourselves separate from this divine rhythm. We try to say how we want it to be, or we fear, or we doubt, or we do any number of things that cause us to be the doer in this activity, that cause us to be separate from our own divine presence. And so that energy that we put out comes back to us, and so that we can learn, so that we can learn the effects of that. And when we start to be putting out a better and better qualities of energy, good energy, that also comes back to us. Until we get to the point of like Trilanga Swami, where masters are so far beyond this whole picture that they perceive the web beyond, and their actions feed mankind, no longer coming back just to their single point of reference because there is none any longer. Well, I was thinking about this action of karma, this, you know, attachment and repulsion activity fed by our desires. And I was thinking back to a part in my life when I was rounding my mid-20s, going on to 26. Suddenly it occurred to me I was getting old and I needed to get married. And so being impatient, being my karmic test in this lifetime, I came by one of those books that was popular at the time about creative visualization. And so I made a picture of who my perfect mate would be. So within 2 months, I met this guy and we got married. And I'm thinking, you know, hey, I'm in charge of this whole deal here. Look what I did. Look what I did. Right? So I forgot to include some important parts to this visualization. One, that he loved God. And two, that we love each other. So it was short-lived. But the funny thing was, is that adage, man proposes, but God disposes. Well, in this case, God just laughed. Because here I was, all I was doing was attracting my own karma to myself. My own limited sense of what I desired, what I needed to fill the emptiness inside me. That sense of desiring for something beyond myself that could be met by another person in the material reality of things. So I continued that lesson for a good many years after that. Desiring, attaching. And so finally, I met someone who was spiritually much wiser than myself. And they reminded me that, no, you have to be in love with your soul first before you can love anyone else. And this begins to take us to the idea that we have to get to the center of this movement. We have to get to the still point to be able to be in rhythm with what's going on. I wasn't in rhythm. I was taking myself, you know, and being in charge of the scene. But this is how we get so fortunate to have a spiritual path. And the idea of a path is that it's a direction. And that if we keep just practicing simple things like gratitude, and Swami Kriyananda has a beautiful way of putting it, if you want to understand someone, project your heart into them. If you want to be creatively inspired, project your vibrations into life. Again, it's the idea of energy, not matter anymore. And when we get so fortunate after this inward calling, after this recognition of our own divine nature, of this calling, this presence calling to us from within, we begin to attract teachers and a master and a guru if we're lucky. Now, some people might think that a guru, that idea is, you know, in this society that's already complicated enough, that we'd be taking on another set of roles or rules and structure into our life. Not at all. When we're so lucky as to have a guru, we have someone who can mirror for us that divine presence within so that we can see it and experience it and feel it ourselves. And then if we stay moving forward on this path, they bring us a whole way of understanding everything that happens in our lives, that we can come around to the deep underlying truth, the deep lesson in the practice of Raja Yoga and the teachings of self-realization. But this idea of path is also very much like a river, that as we enter this river, as we call out to find the river and enter into it, that river leads us directly to the cosmic ocean of bliss, to God, what we're always seeking. And so if we just remember to stay receptive, to keep staying receptive to whatever happens to us, it's not that we want to go surface to surface with things. We want to be able to go to the center. As Yogananda said, life is circumference everywhere. Center everywhere, circumference nowhere. And that we merely have to sometimes see beyond what's in front of us is true seeing, so that we can take our ego identity out of it and begin to perceive what's trying to happen, so that we can get back into the flow of that great rhythm of heaven and earth. That we need not have anxious hearts about this search, that we need only to be ever more receptive to the divine presence within. God bless you.
Sharon and I go hiking often, and we've had many hikes around the Bay Area and elsewhere. And usually during these hikes, we'll come up on a trail that's far away from a lot of homes and just out in the middle of nature. And it'll be a beautiful spot. So immediately my mind goes into designing a house. And I'll design a house, garden, it'll be solar powered, be wind power, there'll be gardens, pool. And I'm in this moment of just living it out. And Sharon has heard me many times say, oh, isn't this a great spot for a house? So finally, one of these hikes, she looked at me and said, you know, you either have done a lot of these homes in a past life with a beautiful view and open space, or you're going to come back and reincarnate many times to live in these homes that you're designing all around the places we hike. And you're probably going to get to a point living in this beautiful home, trying to figure out why you're so unhappy. So this is how karma works. It's these little thoughts that click into our minds, these thoughts forming into desires that eventually will have to be fulfilled. And I've done a lot of reading on karma this week. And a couple of the books we have in the boutique, The Essence of Self-Realization and Conversations with Yogananda, are very eye-opening about karma. Now, it can be so daunting and so vast that you feel completely helpless with it. As one disciple asked Yogananda, out of frustration, that it is like trying to still the ocean waves. And Yogananda pointed out that it is a big job dealing with our karma. But at the same time, it's not as big as we think. We think it's big, but it's not really that big. Because what moves the waves over the ocean? It's the wind. So what we should try to do, and Yogananda pointed this out, is we should still the waves of our mind inside through meditation. Once we begin to still these waves that swirl back and forth, thoughts and images, then we start to get to this even centered point inside of ourselves that sets all that stillness aside, and you begin to experience the inner world, which exists when you start to meditate, when we all start to meditate and meditate deeply. That story years ago where we were in the desert hiking and I was really sick and I didn't think I was going to make it back. And on the trail, trudging along, I just had thousands of thoughts and images pouring in front of me as I had my head down hiking, just trying to make it back to our car. And it was all thoughts that I was connected with in this life and perhaps other lives, because there was unlimited amount. And it was all there, right in front of me. Images, sceneries, things from childhood, things that I had no idea that I could remember. And that's where I had this sinking feeling, well, if I exit my body now, and I thought how depressing it's going to be, because these images were just awful, because it was just me. And I remember at that point just hearing a chant come through, oh God beautiful, oh God beautiful. And that chant and that thought and that power of that chant just kept me putting one foot in front of the other to get back to the car and get myself healthy again. Now, we just have to be very careful. When you look up karma Yogananda states, and he says it simply means action. It's one word. Swami says the same thing. It just means action. Action leads off into many, many, many different avenues for ourselves. Unbelievable. Me designing homes out in the middle of nature. Well, yeah, that's a thought. I'm setting that into motion. Perhaps I am going to have to reincarnate and live in a gazillion homes. But the thing that helps us, the thing that can stop this continual cycle, it's like Alexander coming up to the Gordian knot on his travel into Persia. I mean, he was asked to unravel it. And it would probably be impossible to unravel. So what did he do? He took his sword and he just cut it. So that's what we can start to do with our own actions, our own karma. Is that we can stop these thoughts, and by doing very simple things. And it's really stated very clearly by Yoganandaji and by Swami. Affirmation. Start to reprogram how you think. Watch what you think about other people, about yourself. I can remember years ago sitting in a sports car and driving it for a friend of mine, and I thought, boy, this is nice. And it had a lot of power and a lot of handling. And I thought, boy, it'd be nice to really get into a sports car someday. Well, 2 years ago, I'm coming back from Berkeley Kirtan with a friend of mine, and he has a Porsche, and a new Porsche. And he says, do you want to drive home? And I said, yeah. So I had a fear going along with this thought of driving this Porsche that I would stall it on the freeway. So, of course, I'm driving down the road and I'm starting to feel this power of this Porsche and I'm starting to like it. I'm in the sixth gear and it doesn't feel like I'm moving at all. Traffic slows down, get behind a car, starts up again and I stall it. It was perfect, right on Highway 101. Cars are beeping at me. I can't get this thing going again. It's hard to get it restarted. And my partner, Greg, was just laughing at me and said, you got to get it started. So I got it started again and drove it on home. Well, that night, meditating, just thinking about that, what I went through, I remembered the thought that I had previously, 5 or 6 years ago, that I wanted to drive, what it would be like if I drove a sports car. That's how it all works. You have to really watch. We all have to really watch how we think and what we think about. Now, there's very simple things. Affirmations, I said. Music, chanting. This helps to reprogram these thoughts of ours so we can just put them aside. Moses parts the Red Sea. We can part the Red Sea of our thought so we can just keep it straight and go deeper and deeper into our meditation practice. And it's just a little bit at a time. That's all we have to do to take one step in front of the other, to start to watch and to start to be aware that we don't have to be caught up in this sea of action. You walk out of the doors today and everything is moving left and right and up and down. And when you're locked into that movement, you can just glide along and not be aware of anything. But eventually, you get to the point where you're in this movement of outside, the flow of people, traffic, sound, noise, everything, and you can be totally centered. You can be practicing Om Guru, Om Kali, and just a little quiet mantra to yourself that you're not so caught up. It's just not pulling you left and right, but you're totally centered in that action. Now, we all have the potential to do that, and it's just a matter of catching it and starting to do it. We were watching a movie the other night, a children's book and made into a movie, The Polar Express, and the children go on a trip to the North Pole, and the conductor gives them a golden ticket, and he starts to write something by punching holes in it into the ticket. And then when they do the round trip and they get back to their homes, he writes a particular word for each of the children. And we have a ticket, a golden ticket, that can help break the cycle of action that we live in. And that ticket is Kriya Yoga. In Kriya Yoga, that ticket is labeled freedom. Now, this is a technique, it's not just for certain people, it's for everybody. If you don't have Kriya Yoga, you should come here, learn the steps in order to take Kriya Yoga. You don't have to be anybody. You don't have to be part of a religion. You can just practice it in the privacy of your home. But you should practice it, because this will start to break those cords of karma, Kriya works the subtle currents of just shutting off, stilling all these desires and burning them up in the meditation. And that is exactly what we want to do. We are made up not just of our past lives, but many past lives to the way we look right now today. And certain karmas, certain actions that we put into motion now, desires, they don't have to be fulfilled next lifetime. They can be fulfilled in 10 lifetimes. This is how this cycle works. It's the littlest thing to get stuck into these thoughts of desires, and it's a very little thing to start to redirect it. And you just take one step in front of the other to start that. Kriya Yoga speeds it up. We'll speed it up and take these seeds, take these desires and thoughts that just are sitting there, ready to germinate, and burn them up in the meditation practice. A couple things that will activate seeds of karma, thoughts, is the thought of I want this. I want a house in a beautiful park. I want a fast car. I want. And then you'll get exactly that. And you can go for a long, long time. We can all go for a long, long time spinning these wheels until finally we say, time out. I don't need to do this. There's got to be something more. I can remember my father, when I was 16 years old, sitting me down saying, mapping out the rest of my life for me. And it all made sense, but I couldn't agree with it at all, because there had to be more. And just the thought that I had back then, thinking that there had to be more, I found out that there was more. And to this day, I find out there's even more than what I know now. The most important thing is not about trying to figure out who you were in a past life. I've been to see one clairvoyant over the years, and because I never knew my grandfather, I told the story, I think. I gave her a picture of my grandfather, and she said, oh, this is you. So it turns out that I was my mother's father, and now that really helped me in my stilling of my action, my consciousness, my thoughts. I can't say it really helped me, but I do know my mother looked at me a day before she died and told me I was a good father to her. So that was very interesting. But it's not about the past lives. It's not about what's going to happen in the future. It's about November 27th, Sunday, today. This is what's important. And when you walk outside today after service, just be, feel, start to practice whatever you can to feel that there's got to be something else. Who is working through us when we do things? Question yourself. What is freedom? Think about it. Have you told yourself you're free already? Probably not, because you think that can't be true. And if you think that can't be true, well, then you're not. But Yogananda states clear that we're free already. So think, change it, reprogram. Get rid of the grooves that have sunk in there by habit, to reprogram them. Start to understand for yourself that you are free, that we are made up of spirit, that we are connected already, that all this that we see around us is God's vibration, is energy. You start to fall into that vibration, you'll start to see it happening around you, and you'll start to feel an inner connection, which already you have, with the divine. And the divine works hand in hand. You know, I've been through a lot of challenges. It's not a joyride, but all these challenges have been a plus for me to purify. So challenges are opportunities. Problems you can solve. It may not be the next day, but they can happen. It can happen. Praying for people, being compassionate with people. These are things to start to reprogram how we think. Because how we think, boy, so we will come. I mean, it's a guarantee. And here we are today, and you have very, very good karma for being here today and coming to this service. Yogananda used three verys, very, very, very good karma, even to want to know God. That's a plus. So work with the pluses. I mean, I was in a colonial fort back on the Hudson River years ago, and I was meditating there. And I had a feeling that I had been there in this fort or during that period of time. Very strong feeling, very feeling, very uplifting feeling, because I was fighting for freedom. And now, do I know that for sure? I don't. On the other side of it all, a couple years later, I'm down in the Caribbean, on a little Caribbean island, overlooking a little town that was discovered in the 1500s. And I felt, looking out into the little bay, that I was a really bad person and a really nasty pirate. And it was so strong, it was just as strong as feeling that I had in Fort Washington up on the Hudson. One was positive and one was really ugh. And I had to really strongly meditate to let go of that, to let go of that feeling, because it wasn't. I wasn't the 1700s or 1600s, but I was having this experience that, and I really felt bad about myself. Well, I don't know if those things were really true. I do know, though, that once I meditated, that everything was fine, gone, dissolved. And I was just who I was in the moment. Those three words that Ram Dass stated in the 60s, be here now, and they're really important to think about. Be in the moment in whatever you do. Ask yourself always, always, who is working through you. You'll be surprised who is working through you, because you'll start to feel that this presence is working through you, this joy, and it's so uplifting. It's so uplifting. And then you'll start to unravel that cord. You'll start to break it. You'll start to practice your deepen your meditations, your Kriya Yoga. And then you'll start to sense this freedom. And you'll be on your way to freedom.